Blog Talk Radio.
That's right, everybody. That's the one and only Robert Nasta Marley. Get up and stand up. That's what the people are doing. This is Tuesday, and you know we had to talk about it since another black man was murdered in the streets of Atlanta. They must be trying to send us a message, right? Clearly, the message is they want to kill us. And it turns out that that particular cop had several complaints. I saw somewhere on the internet some reports, and they keep hiring these racists. And I also see, we jump right into it. This is Kay, Son, and Friends. I'm Citizen Payne. My mom, Kay Thompson, is having the radio show in the sky up in heaven. And my boys, the legendary newsman, Wayne Gilman, and the legendary historian, my brother, Byron Saunders, is going to jump in a minute. But, yeah, man, we had to do an extra, and we're going to start trying to come to you a little bit more regular because we have to keep an eye on things, just like they did back in the day with WLIB, to constantly keep an eye and make these people accountable. All you have to do is go on the internet, go on Instagram or any one of these sites, Facebook, anywhere, and you will see countless episodes of aggressive acts by white police officers against African Americans, unwarranted episodes, countless episodes of Caucasian Americans harassing people, black people, people who are supportive of black people, like the brother in San Francisco, I believe was an Asian gentleman who was painting Black Lives Matter on his property outside his house, and two white people stopped him and thought he was just defacing the property and assumed that it wasn't his house. And being as ignorant as they often are, probably always are, they lied and said they know the people that owned the house. And, of course, he knew that was not true because it was his house. And all you got to do is look at the video, and you see the lady, head of a skincare company who I think they fired, good riddance, lying and saying, "We know the people in here, her and her husband." And I just want to know what's wrong with these people, because normally I'm the type that will curse them out and tell them to go on their way, but... And all these various parts of the country, I'm tripping at all these people that are losing their mind, and not only losing it just on black people, they're losing it. It's like they said, it's black. It's not black versus white. It's everybody versus the racist asses, and they lose it on white people, Asian people, everybody that wants freedom from oppression. I'm going to bring my boy Byron Saunders because he is down there in D.C. where it's really hot.
Oh, my goodness. Yes,
Byron.
It is.
What's going on,
so
brother?
Hot. How are you, my brother? Well,
right,
the cesspool is the cesspool. And right now, as of today, there are 2,176,765 people in the United States who have been infected with COVID-19. Fatal cases right now, as of today, 118,588 and counting. And when I say and counting, ladies and gentlemen, as of today, CDC and other pandemic experts and doctors are predicting that by October, there will be over 200,000 deaths. Remember that number. Remember that number. Right now, as of today, there are over 47 million people unemployed. Remember that number so that you understand when they start feeding you crap about the economy being so great. I don't care what the stock market is doing because the stock market is playing with monopoly money right now. Remember that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Exactly. And the majority of Americans don't have the money to invest in the stock market anyway. So it's really interesting how they push that, what the market is doing, and they have all of these Americans, I'm going to say white people, that believe in that, and they're poor, they're working poor, but they talk about the market is doing great. You're not even benefited from the stock market. And you know, sometimes you can be so racist and ignorant that you could physically see it on people. And you know how you see some of these people that look inbred, look very uneducated. And these, unfortunately, are people that are being taken advantage. But clearly they must want to be taken advantage because they cling on to their racism. And the only thing they have in thinking that they're still better than people of color, which constantly gets proven to them to be wrong on a daily basis, but they want to hold on to it. The murder of Rashard Brooks in Atlanta. The crazy thing to me about Atlanta is that you know, a couple of weeks before that, you had the police abusing the two African American students in a car, tasing the brother. And if you look at the tape, the cops are trying to pull the brother out, but he's being tased, so he can't really respond. And the idiots are trying to pull him out. And you even had a couple of black cops that were involved in that. So, you know, there's a mentality that people get sometimes when they have a little bit of power. I've seen it in all walks of life. and that's the human aspect, you know, Byron. You know, you've got to account for human beings. You got to account for when you think about, I mean, there's that impulse in human beings. There's an impulse for power with some people. There's an impulse to want to beat the crap out of people. For example, let's say the criminal who robs and beats up an old lady. Now, I'm the type of individual, if the cops tune him up, I might not really care too much. An individual that beats up old elderly people or children, or takes advantage or really does heinous crimes. But we know that in this racist society that treatment is not going to be equal across the board. Clearly, if we look at the way that they dealt with Brother Rashard Brooks running away with a stun gun, and, you know, those stun guns that they have, they shoot something out. So there's only a certain amount of distance that is actually going to hurt the cop. And if you look in the video, I believe it's the cop who was running first that shot him. I'm not sure which cop shot him. The one that was running after him the quickest, I think that's the one that shot him, because he was the one that was getting aimed at with the stun gun. But the remarkable thing is, if you look at the video, there's people in line in the drive-thru, and this guy is shooting, you know, with abandon, you know, not worried about other citizens. Secondly, he looks like he runs into a parked car, and he kind of grazes against it, and he has the agility to pull his gun out and still shoot the brother in the back, which is really ironic to me. And also, too, Byron, as you know, how their discretion when it comes to African-Americans is a lot more harsh. They deal with us in a lot harsher manner, because we've all seen tapes on or clips of video clips on the internet where these cops were being so patient with a white dude with a sword, white dude with a gun, white dude that was wrestling them at him, white people that were arguing in their face, yelling in their face in Michigan, but very calm in terms of dealing with these people. Dylan Roof and the guy who briefly, about a week or two ago, that was on a killing spree. These guys, they take him to Dylan Roof. The friggin' cops took him to Burger King. Took him to Burger King. So there's clearly... Yeah, it took him to get a Happy Meal. So clearly there's racism, and I find it interesting that the individuals that keep saying, you know, these cops, well, they had to react that way, and it was, let's investigate the shooting. Was it a good shooting? But these are all white individuals. I always see it's white men trying to justify these shootings that are clearly in a violation. You see, it's on videotape, but it's still white individuals, head of police unions, head of police benevolent associations, the racist element of these organizations that are always trying to justify a shooting of an African-American, always white. So this is getting ridiculous and crazy, and I guess they must want us to respond. I don't know. They got their guy, the racist, the Grand Wizard in Chief. You know, go ahead, Byron.
Well, because basically the notion of confrontation is one has to be a provocateur. One, even if you're standing in the WWF ring and you pick up the chair, okay, so you're going to turn the tables and you're going to beat the crap out of the guy standing across from you with the chair so that you can get an advantage. That's what this game is called. Let's beat the crap out of each other and see who cries uncle first. Very dangerous game to play. Because one thing is certain, you will have bodies in the street dead. Just like that situation in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Right.
You bring the gun to the OK Corral. What do you expect?
Yeah.
Tell me.
And that's what these do. These individuals, as I sit here and look at the clip of Trump in the White House garden today with all of these white law enforcement officers around him and the one black guy, you know, talking about he's supportive of police officers and all this stuff. The guy's a racist, and he makes no bones about it, and he takes every opportunity, like they always do, to give us the middle finger. And you said something about a provocateur, to provoke people, right? That's when you come and stand in the manner that you're standing, when people are trying to mourn and express their frustration, and you come dressed up the way many of these riot cops are. They're trying to provoke something. I'll give you an example. Over the weekend, I was over here in Jersey, out someplace, and there were obviously a number of protests around the area, but I was waiting for a friend to pull up alongside this park, popular park, where a number of black people, I was one of many, parked alongside this park, and some other people were standing alongside the park talking. And so one car, a police car, was in the area, was across the street with his lights on, just hanging out for whatever reason. They had a staging area in the park for the county police officers, I guess, if those protests got out of hand. But and there was one cop who pulled up with, I think, three cops, and the two went in the store, and the one stood outside. And the two, as I watched them come out, were two African-American, and the one that stood outside was a white dude. Now, what caught my attention was that he was standing there like he was on patrol, like he was on point. You know, he didn't have a gun. I wasn't brandishing a gun, but just his whole body language was like he was stationed there, and he was supposed to be looking. And as opposed to the other two guys who went in the store to get something to eat because they came out with a bag. So as opposed to like leaning on the car and just looking at his watch, looking around, looking at his phone, his position that he adopted, his stance that he adopted was one of which I'm on patrol, I'm occupying this territory. And so, you know, I was just standing there looking at him with my cop stance, you know, my military projection when I'm projecting, looking at him, you know. But it was like, that's what they, you know, they try to provoke some or try to project an image.
Right.
And I guess it must be that we must project a really powerful, strong image to make these people go through such changes. That's the only thing that I can come up with, B, that what makes them so afraid of us.
Well, the thing that's surprising to me about this recent case is that ultimately the gentleman suggested to the officer he could walk home.
Yeah.
Walk home. He wasn't trying to drive his car. He recognized it because he said in the quick Q&A once he took the breathalyzer, how did I do? And the cop said, you failed. He said, well, don't worry. I can walk from here. He didn't have to provoke him beyond that conversation.
Right.
Right then it could have ended. It could have ended right then with get home safely. Is there a number that I can call at your place where your sister is so they know that you're on your way so that we can make sure you get home safely? That's his job, to protect and to serve. And it would have ended right there. No, but he had to say, put your arms behind your back. What's it escalating to? And for what? For what?
Exactly.
What was the purpose to escalate it?
Exactly. Exactly. There's no purpose other than they want to feel then they control.
The macho,
and,
make a nigga pay for being a nigga, basically.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why also, too, if you notice, that's why these guys, you know, George Floyd, Big Brother, 6'6", Eric Garner, Big Brother.
Yes.
They feel, for lack of a better term, some sort of rush if they could take down a large black man. You know, it's almost like hunting a big, I don't know, they just feel some sort of rush, like I took that big, you know, and you know what down, and I think that that's how they feel. That's why they do that, you know.
Right.
And with
think of it like you. What if the scenario is exactly as you defined it in the case with the gentleman in Minneapolis? Because at the point at which you have the training session going on by the officer who is deemed to give the training, and he's sitting there with his opportunity to show his macho, I've been given the responsibility to train you cadets. You're an Asian, you're a native, and you're a white boy. Okay, here's the deal. See that big 6 foot man, dingo, I'm not going to even use the N-word, but you see that big buck over there? Let me show you how to take it down.
Right, exactly.
And then with his knee on his neck, hands in his pocket, using his body for leverage against the car to kneel even harder, and with a smirk on his face, if his hands in his pocket, what's he doing, playing with himself?
Yeah. I don't
see what I'm going with,
that,
you know?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely was relaxed. I kind of think he was just sitting there with his hands. I think he was even more relaxed than that. I don't think he was sitting there with his hands in his pocket. I think he was sitting there, you know, you sit and you rest your hands right on your thighs like that.
Yeah.
Which is
a
really comfortable, like, I'm comfortable, I'm nice and comfortable. And he was nice and comfortable with his knee on the brother's neck. And you could see him maneuvering as George is just trying to at least get a breath, you know.
Yeah,
and you can see him maneuvering to make it more painful.
Now, the visual that you saw, and I have not reposted it, but when I saw it, even my jaw dropped to the floor. After the applied neck procedure that killed him, the EMS truck or the EMT truck pulls up. The attendants who jumped out of the back of the truck were not EMT employees. They were sheriffs. Go back and look at the tape. Please look at the tape. When have you ever seen a door open from an EMT truck and sheriff's people exit from the emergency vehicle to pick up the body?
Yep.
He
was already knew
dead before they got to the hospital.
Well, that's the release of the fluids. When you see the fluids.
When they picked him up and put him on the gurney, you can see his neck had already been snapped.
Yep. Yep. That's what they do. Let's bring in Wayne Gilman. He's the newsman here. Wayne is joining us. What's up, Wayne? We had to do a special Tuesday because we got to keep an eye on these folks. I was going to use a Farrakhan phrase, but I'm going to say we have to keep an eye on these folks. What's up, Wayne Gilman? You there? 914-36. Maybe that's not Wayne Gilman. Your mic is open if you want to say something. All right. Well, maybe you're just listening. I don't know if that's you.
For me. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, if that's you, Wayne, try to call back or whatever. I don't know if this is you. But I'm watching the footage. I just disconnected you, Wayne, so call back. I'm watching the footage, Byron, of that Albuquerque, New Mexico situation.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was the dude that was starting all the trouble that shot at the protesters or whether it was another militia. Oh, it was him. Yeah, I see him pulling out a gun, the militia guy.
Yeah.
Pulled out a 9.
And then they surrounded him.
Right, and then the other militia surrounded to protect him, which is really deep.
In the parlance of the Wild Wild West, that's a Texas shootout right there. Come on.
New Mexico shootout, yeah. You know, what tripping me out about it, these guys, a lot of these guys, they want to mess with, you know, they want to throw down women and smaller guys and dorky people. And they, you know, just like the one out in Montana where he was yelling at people's faces and stuff like that, they always pick those dudes. They don't ever pick the one that looks like they mean business. That looks like it's,
right.
You know, you notice they never step to the guys looking, who's just looking at them real calm, straight back in their eyes, just waiting. They never step to those dudes because, you know, you kind of know the person that you should mess with and that you shouldn't mess with. And all of these cowards, that's what they all do. They're all cowards, all of them, because that's why they gang up on us in a mob. Maybe this is Wayne again, and let me see if he's available. If this is Mr. Wayne Gilman. Wayne Gilman, is that you, sir? Are you able to get through?
Yes, it's me. I'm on speaker. I hope that's not a problem.
All right, we can hear you now. Good.
No,
we couldn't hear you before.
Sounding good.
Go on, jump in there, brother. What's your assessment here?
Well, I tell you, I mean, I was unable to hear the show from the beginning, but I will tell you this much. Atlanta stunned me. You know, I don't know what more to say. You know, you would think that after what we went through in Minneapolis would have been enough, and then you turn around and have this thing come back at you. And I can't help but feel that there may be some sort of clandestine effort to just put us in place. You know, I mean, I don't want
to
say, I don't want
to paint
with a broad brush.
It looks pretty out in the open to me. It doesn't look too clandestine.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I understand. I mean, it's sobering. I mean, I'm afraid to even drive home, you know, because you just don't know what to expect. You know, somebody pulls you over. I mean, there was a time that we were all trained when something like that happened, you'd be respectful. I mean, the situation in Atlanta was
Hello?
No reason for this guy to be shot in the back. And again, out of my curiosity, every once in a while, I'll put on those crazy folks at Fox. And I had a chance to watch maybe the first 10 minutes of Hannity last night, and I wanted to throw up. You know, I mean, it's just, he has this retired officer, Don Bongino, whatever his name is, and he takes the defense for the police officers who are caught in the middle of whatever life-threatening situations they're in, and then he puts Geraldo on to, you know, basically try to balance the program, and there was no balance at all. They were screaming back and forth, making a mockery of this guy's death. I mean, somebody needs to go to the FCC and have these people shut down. They should have their licenses removed. It's not journalism. It's not even entertainment anymore. It's breaking up this country. That people who are not really being informed at all. You know? It's despicable.
Well, they're not interested in being informed. They're interested in getting saying what they want to say. I wonder what that damn Bongino or that guy, it looks like he could be some black mixed in there somewhere. I was wondering who that guy was. He's an ex-law enforcement or he's an ex-cop? Is that what his situation
is? Yeah, he's an ex-NYPD officer. And, you know, Bongino, I'm not familiar with his nationality. He could be Italian. And, of course, Hannibal had his way with the Italians, so you know anything could be running through his
blood. Well, he looks a little bit. He's got a little color to him. So I mean, you know, but he might be self-hating, just like they had that big giant guy on there who's half black and half white, the wrestler.
Oh yeah.
And they dig, but I mean, you know, it is what it is. When you listen to that network, as you know, you're gonna get what you're gonna get. I find and you know, we all know that Fox News started to be more of a propaganda arm once George Bush was elected, you know, when they started using that Fox as a propaganda arm of a Republican Party. And so now you have all these other networks that are just basically, you know, they're not news, they're propaganda net. One America, you know, and what's the other one?
Right.
I forget. But there's a couple of them out now that are news agencies that just, you know, they promote the racist regime line, and that's what they do. And they find a couple of sellout ethnics to get on these shows that agree with them, and you know, that's their stilo. I mean, I like to check them out every once in a while just to see how batshit crazy they are and the crazy stuff that they like to make up, literally making stuff up, like Trump today made up whatever he made up about criminal justice reform and the police reviewing police reform, claiming it wasn't done in the previous administration when it's a fact that his administration dismantled the recommendations about police reform that Barack Obama's administration put in. But this is what we know about the guy. The guy's a liar, and he just makes stuff up. And it's ironic that with everything that was happening over the weekend, what he could focus on was the fact that he was trying not to slip down the ramp coming from his speech or whatever you could call it at a West Point. And so we know the type of individual we're dealing with. You know, it's just I don't think any of us expected Donald Trump to be just such a despicable person.
I knew he was
taking the word despicable to new lengths.
Exactly. I knew he was bad, but I never thought he would get like this. And it's just shameful. I mean, you know, to me, there should be some sort of mechanism, as I said. There needs to be a way of venting people out prior to them running. And then when we get knee-deep in the weeds like this, they need to be pulled. You know, don't wait for some commanding officer or five former generals, you know, lose their position within a position of authority, and then they come back and be critical. You know, I mean, all the lives lost because of this guy's inadequate ability to handle a leadership role for this government. All his obsession with destroying anything that Barack Obama put together, you know. I mean, when history looks back at this, man, this is going to be worse than Hitler, you know? I mean,
yeah,
the thing is that it's got to be. I mean, I just can't imagine how he would be looked favorable by anybody, you know, anyone with common sense.
Well, there's certainly individuals that do look upon him favorably that are just as despicable as he is, but clearly he's going to go down as being probably one of the most despicable persons to ever live, I think, at least that we know of. Just look at what he thought, what he was doing in D.C., have you been out there, Byron, to see that to see the street painted like that, or are you still practicing the social distancing, which I want to get off into the coronavirus? But have you
all
been?
Right.
Were you able?
No, I have not gone down there. And let me share with you. You know, my bout with my flu. I've been reading all of the pandemic symptoms. And I realized that I may have had a touch of coronavirus 19 if I hadn't been tested yet. But I also realized with my spirit of the height of which I support the marchers, because I am so proud of the mayor of Washington, D.C., who took the time to let the president and the administration and the world to let them know that Black Lives Matter Plaza is 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Couldn't have been more prophetic, built by slaves and now running the city, built the White House. So I look at beyond just the immediacy of the chaos, because there's some moments that are very huge that are happening that are making significant historical marks that will be the things that I'll look back on that will say, you know, it was at that moment where change literally flipped. It became a moment in history, and it will impact on every decision made forward. Where we are now, we're seeing it happen. It's very scary, because at the rate at which it's happening, and we're now realizing that there'll be over 200,000 people killed from this virus in America. And next weekend, we're going to be engaging in what could be the most pandemonial series setup ever orchestrated by a bunch of real neocons who will literally infect probably 67,000 people. And so it's basically those people who will be carriers. It only takes one person to be the infected carrier.
Exactly.
That's all it takes.
Well, just like they talked about someplace out west where you know, all these people wanted to go to the bar, and they all went, and 16 of them ended up with the coronavirus.
Yeah.
And they had one of the people, some girl on, saying, well, I wish I hadn't gone now. And yeah, but, you know, they make it into a racial thing. They make it into a political thing to wear masks or not to wear masks. This guy's trying to act like the virus is gone. Kudlow is trying to act like the virus is gone, but still, and yet they want everybody to sign a waiver not to sue them if they get the virus at their rally. What kind of monkey? I mean, what is going on? You know, how stupid do you have to be?
The hypocrisy. That's
stupidity.
That's
it is. It's stupidity,
you know?
And these individuals in Georgia is getting a spike, and you know the Klansman down there. He's fully open. The state is fully open down there with him, even though all these places, probably majority of Republican governors, are showing spikes now, and Florida is showing spikes now too. And here's the thing: I'm wondering if New York and Jersey, if we could have a kind of a border crossing, not to let any of these individuals in our state. Because they're the individuals that want to go out there. They want to be free. They want, and I'm all about freedom. If you want to go expose yourself to disease, go ahead, but don't bring it around me. You know, stay around your crew.
And here's a pandemic setup for you. That's just the perfect storm. Washington D.C. has been closed up until this date. Today, as of Friday, we are going to start easing the restrictions of people coming into what happens to be the nation's number one most visited city. And we are going to have marches and just one person can be the infected carrier. And it's very scary because at this point, why should I leave my house to go intermingle with and jump into a swimming pool filled with viruses and elements that will hurt me. So if I choose to stay home, I'm gonna support the way I can. I'm on a radio show. How many people got this platform? Okay,
exactly.
I'm gonna do what I can to continue to give the truth because I'm here. I'm here on ground zero, and this is important because the history that comes out of this moment will establish whether this empire survives or crumbles.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I'm sorry. I'm just sitting here. I have the sound turned down watching MSNBC, and I watched a clip of Mike Pence today in Idaho or Iowa, wherever he was, at some restaurant.
Yeah.
And obviously it's fully open. Most of the people, just about everybody in there, not wearing masks. Pence comes in with his crew, they're not wearing masks. And it's just, these people's racism is so crazy that if you say it, if a Democrat is saying it, a black Democrat is saying it, they automatically want to do the opposite. And it's just remarkable to see these people. You're going to put your own life at risk. I know you got to die, everybody got to die someday, but you don't want to do the smart thing and protect yourself a little bit. I'm just saying it would seem to that would be the smart thing to do. It's just like I think that these guys that have this guy that's head of their Patrolman's Benevolent Association in New York, the one who's talking about it doesn't happen. You know, the one who's talking about that black, that doesn't happen. The shootings don't happen. I think that I think they probably want to get rid of that guy. Because he must really be screwing up their money because he does not have the ability to recognize and assess a problem. You know, if he's talking about it, doesn't happen. So they probably want to rethink letting that dude handle their money. And the whole crazy thing about their racism is that it creates the backlash that it creates, like we talked about before, is that it goes back and it wipes everybody out. So the two dudes in Buffalo who got reprimanded or fired off the force because they pushed that old man, but like I said, they looked like they had some remorse, looked like they really didn't mean to push him down that hard, but they get fired as a result of the backlash that all cops are getting the reputation that they're all no good now. And
well,
we know that,
you know,
that's not exactly true, but we know we need to have integrated police forces, that's for damn sure.
And see,
well,
the war
and therein
the
lies,
of the problem. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say that therein lies the quandary. I mean, the thing is, this is more cultural awareness than anything else. You know, I think there are enough progressive whites who understand what's going on here, what needs to be done. And obviously, you see more and more of them out there, you know, peacefully protesting. You even go into the burbs and you see signs where Black Lives Matter, because it's not just black people alone that are affected by this sickness, this racism that this country's so well known for. It's worldwide, but it's certainly prominent in this country. But at the end of the day, there is a culture in the police department that needs to be revamped. It just needs to be. There's so many different things that they could be doing to just make it a better operation without having to defund the operation. You know, the focus should be on having them live in the very communities that they patrol. You know, there was a time that you would see officers walking the beat, walking the streets. Everybody's locked up in their patrol cars, you know. And then when they come out like Rambo. I mean, it's just one of those things, man. There needs to be some sort of behavior modification for these officers. And the law has to be uniform. You can't have a situation where there's no chokehold in New York, and then suddenly it's okay in Florida. You know, that's the problem. You can't have a situation where there's, you know, a situation where it's okay in some states for them to do a chokehold in the event that that they could possibly. If they feel their lives are threatened, that it's acceptable behavior for them to go that far, you know, and that needs to end. I mean, there's so many states that just aren't in lockstep with all that is going on, and then the next thing you know, they you want to know, well, why is it that they're shooting? You know, why must they take somebody's life, you know, for no freaking reason at all? The guy only had a taser. You're going to come back and shoot him in the back? What kind of nonsense is that?
Well, that's
you know?
What they do, isn't it? You're going to say, Byron?
Well, the systemic part of all of this is in denial from the very top of the food chain, that being the Oval Office, that there's systemic racism in this nation. It's very alarming to see how a Republican senator or congressperson, when asked by one of our esteemed journalists whether the Supreme Court's decision yesterday was impactful and such, well, I really didn't get a chance to study it. You know, I mean, it's like, really, guys, come on, stop trying to shuffle.
It's ignorance, man. It's stinking ignorance.
Well,
that's all it is.
You know damn well that what you're doing is you are engaging in treasonous behavior when you step outside of that arena after having taken an oath to serve and protect the Constitution. The Supreme Court has rendered the constitutional value of what is there. And you come on the air and say, well, I think the Supreme Court is politicizing the issue. Where do you get off with impunity to violate your sworn oath? Right
yeah.
there in public. That's treason.
Are you talking about Alito?
I talk about all of them. Any Republican who ran from the reporter who has asked a legitimate question relative to the Constitution, which you're supposed to be the defender of.
So well, what does that tell you? In essence, it tells you that that whole thing of the Constitution and the America and the whole image is a facade, right? It's a facade
exactly.
for others to do as we have said, those of us that wrote this Constitution, those of us that have signed this Constitution, those of us that are white people of stature in this country, that's just a guideline for others to follow. And it doesn't apply to us unless we need it. You know,
yeah.
And that's the whole thing about it. It's not real. This whole country was based. Was built on the fact and had as part of its core culture the oppression of another people, slavery to Jim Crow, to I'm sure Byron, you've seen Turner Classic Movies' little thing about black face in Hollywood and how that whole historical thing came about. It was a culture. Part of the culture was the oppression of black people. And if you look, that's why the picnic is referred to it as it is, in a barbecue. And that's why those people used to get dressed up and thought it was a joyous occasion to go and watch a black person be burned to death or hung to death or butchered or disboweled or dismembered. If you read some of the books, a book I picked up from the Shrine of the Black Madonna is at the bookstore or whatever that's out there in Detroit, was a book called 100 Years of Lynching. And all it is a compilation of news clippings, of news stories, you know, because they would write a news story about every time a man was lynched and how some of the barbaric treatment that in burning some of the individuals alive, how some of the people thought it was great, was a cool thing to go and take a piece of the man's ear off or a piece of their body. These are savage, savage individuals. And what they base the whole facade of America on is some sort of truth, justice in the American way, when we know these people were living in caves until we gave them civilization. And so is it any wonder that this is their behavior? And is it any wonder that when they see the very image of God before them, they lose their mind? Because that's what the black man is, the image of God before them. That's why they lose their mind.
The piece of history, the Shrine of the Black Madonna, the founder of the Shrine of the Black Madonna is Jeremoji, who happens to be Pearl Clegg's father, the writer, Pearl Clegg.
Am I correct? That is a bookstore, right, Byron? Am I correct?
It is a bookstore. It is a church. Okay. It's the Shrine of the Black Madonna. It is an entire Christian sect. Also, you have to ask your question. Ask the question for yourself. The failure of the Reconstruction was because they tried to appease the Southern way of they just lost the war. That's why we're in the state we're in right now, because those same mentalities that I just talked about of a senator who would remember the southern states in order to re-engage into the union called the United States of America were to swear an oath to abide by the Constitution. That's how they got back into the union. Andrew Johnson tried to backdoor that to give them back the authority to engage in what ultimately was created was sharecropping and basically another form of slavery. And at that point,
thus,
Reconstruction ended because they could not, Ulysses S. Grant had to pull the troops out of the areas where there were racial violence because it was getting to be untenable and it would have engaged in creating another civil war or continuing it. So if you have to think about it, every time you hear a congressman or a senator, I don't care whether it's Democrat, Republican, Independent, and they're sitting there talking about how the Supreme Court rulings and the 13th Amendment and the 14th Amendment, and notice how in this decision what they went back to was the 1964 Civil Rights Act.
Right.
So it has validity.
Of course.
See, that's the part of which 64 Civil Rights Act, and it took you to 2020 to reaffirm the reality that it was also inclusive of sexual orientation. Where are you getting your political training from that tells you you can just, out of nowhere, deny the Constitution without taking down?
Unless you know the Constitution doesn't apply to you. Unless you know it's really, that's just for them other people. That's why you say that, right? And also, too, wasn't that civil rights decision in 60 whatever? Didn't they sign it for like 54. 50 years? Or that was the Voting Rights Act, right?
They had to re-engage it. You're absolutely right.
Had to re-engage
it. That's right.
And it makes sense now, right? It makes sense because when I first heard they had to re-engage, reauthorize, I was like, so they made it a temporary thing? They made it temporary. So I'm like, what were they thinking? What was their plan in 50 years' time for them to say, well, we'll make it temporary because maybe we could change everybody's mind, or maybe we could flip this back to our favor, right?
That's how they were able to deconstruct the 1968 Civil Rights Act, which was the Voting Rights Act, which ultimately gave Mississippi delegation that Fannie Lou Hamer created to integrate it, to come into the Democratic Party. And in 1968, Mark is here, I'm telling you, because history will show you exactly the kinds of voter suppression that would take place beyond that and into where we are with redlining and all other kinds of stuff, because they realized that the Black Power base had established itself. There were 30,000 new voters that came into the state of Mississippi as a result of the Mississippi Freedom Delegation Party with SNCC and Fannie Lou Hamer and Medgar Evers and all the people who bled sweat and tears to give us the right to vote. And that's why at this point you have congressmen, senators who have been picking at the Voting Rights Act of 1968 to deconstruct its power, eliminating Section 5, 4, 3, one of those, probably all three of them, that basically took the teeth out of the Voting Rights Act. The Supreme Court did that under Bush.
And the orange man wants it all gone.
That's right. And
he wants it all gone.
Southern states, and know this, the southern states have been intentionally trying to hold a constitutional convention. They have 20, they're like three states short of 2/3 votes needed to engage a constitutional convention to change some of the basic principles of the Constitution. This is the insidious plot that's ongoing from the right-wing conservatives in this country.
Shameful. Shameful.
Yes. Yes.
You know.
Yeah,
I don't know what it's going to take.
Part of my
issue
with the Democrats is with the Democratic Party is that we always want to, I mean, when you're stuck being the good guy, like I said before, you know, and we equate Byron, at least you and I, and Wayne, too, you're a newsman from a different perspective, but we equate being the good guy with having to play by the rules. And so that's the problem that the Democrats are hung up with, right? They got to play by the rules because, you know, in the movie, the good guy can't resort to the principles of the bad guy because that makes him no different from that dude. So our hands are tied to a certain degree. Also to the fact that I think that some of the individuals that are on our side aren't really on our side, but they're like, you know, like double agents. Because clearly there must be some reason why we don't think of a plan for 30 years like the Republicans do. Why we don't think of a 30-year, 40-year plan to say we want the Democrats to be here in 40 years like the Republicans do. Because, like you said, they've been trying to pick at the Constitution all these years. That's the long-term goal.
But the Democrats have been pushing back all those years, too. Whether the Democrats are too polite about it or not, we've had to push back. And the problem is, you've said this time and again, Eric, that we don't know how to sell our story. But
that's true.
A point now. We're at the precipice of change. You know, there's no turning back after what we've been through these last 3-4 years, and particularly this year, since February, and to think of the untold number of people who died and the numbers that are going to come as a result of the foolishness, the lack of leadership that goes on in this administration, you know. And I tell you, I'm not one to wish something bad on anyone, But I think Trump and Pence should get a taste of what it is to be like, to be confined, suffering, because both of their lives, as far as their health is concerned, have been compromised. You know, that's
yes.
why no one publicly comes out and discuss, other than what they want the media to know about Trump's health. And Pence, he's supposed to be the picture of health, you know. And no one's immune in this. This ain't about going after color. This affects everybody, you know. So at the end of the day,
go ahead, Wayne. They
use it as a political football, try to get ignorant people who are not informed to think their way until they see their loved one dying in a hospital, or the streets are just filled with refrigerated trucks with body bags inside and stuff like that. I mean, this is sickening, you know. It really is sickening, and I just think that come November, we have got to turn out in large numbers, make sure the ballots are mailed. If they're not mailed, that we stand at the polls. And it's got to be a worldwide effort just to get, you know, I don't want to just look at his poll numbers being down and say that's sufficient, because they always got some way to come back. If it's not the Electoral College, it's something else. But, you know, it's disgusting now.
They cheat.
That's it.
I mean, I'm sitting here looking at the MSNBC with the sound turned down. The crawl title says Republicans across the U.S. try to make voting harder, because in Iowa they passed harder voter ID laws, and then they adjourned the session. So this is what I'm talking about. They have that long-term plan where they, in their state legislatures, they take care of it there on that level. Then they all get together and say, we're going to go after, get our judges on the federal level out of the states. So they have their long-term plans, you know, and we need to, you know, long-term plan.
I will give my fair share of the plan, because this week is Juneteenth celebration. And, folks, we all know what's happening this weekend in Tulsa, Oklahoma, because on Saturday, you know, that orange dude is going to mess up things with all the COVID stuff. But on the 19th, Juneteenth, 2020, 8 o'clock, you remember my play, Fannie Lou Hamer story. It's playing on the 19th at 8 o'clock on Facebook Live and Instagram. Guys, listen, special introduction of the play by A.M. Joy Reid, of MSNBC weekend morning show host Joy Reid. This is for you guys. Learn about the story of the woman who we just got to talking about, the 64 Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act. Fannie Lou Hamer, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. Well, Friday,
sick and tired.
8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time, you get a chance to engage in seeing this story live with the one-woman show as presented by and written and performed by Emzuri Moyo Mbaye and directed by yours truly, Byron C. Saunders. But the story is brilliant. It's all about voting. Understand why voting is so important. Every week on this show, we keep telling you, y'all got the power, but you got to know the history of the power. And if you don't know the history of the power, you will understand why you will get in that booth and pull that lever and feel a power like a superhero that you are. Do it, people. 8 o'clock this Friday. Don't watch nobody else. Go to Facebook and go to Instagram if you want to see this. And the Q&A afterwards, the town hall type of meeting, so they can actually talk about Fannie Lou Hamer. And it's the introduction special by AM Joy, MSNBC weekend morning show host Joy Reid is introducing the show. One more thing.
That's fantastic. Congratulations, Byron. That's fantastic.
Thank you. So we have solutions. See, it's not just talk, but you got to know
that's
the history, people.
That's right. And, you know, also, too, really quick as we go out, because we've got about another 2.5 minutes, you know, and as I said last week, you know, each generation is learning and using the tools of the previous generation. And, you know, a lot of you will hear the notion, like some people say who don't really know any better, well, they didn't get it done before. No, this is how long the task takes. And unfortunately, when people start realizing, like I said before, that this might be your life dealing with this, your life in the struggle, and eventually you're going to have to ante up. What are you going to do to move the progression of our people forward? And so when people say the generation before you worked, believe me, because you wouldn't have what you have now. You wouldn't have that much information that you had now had they not done what they needed to do or tried as hard to push the issue forward as they could. So, you know.
There you go.
I mean, that's what I wanted to say. I mean, we've got 90 seconds left, so maybe you guys wanted to give a couple of last-minute words before we jump off. Wayne, go ahead.
Well,
I tell you, Byron said it all. I think it's so important just that people sit down and get a chance to watch that. I'm not a Facebook person, but I'm going to find my way to see if I can do that 8 o'clock on Saturday night just to check it out. Because
Friday night,
we got a minute. Let's go.
Friday night. What am I saying? I'm sorry.
All right,
Saturday.
Let's wrap it up.
I'm not going to Trump.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, there it is. Wayne Gilman.
Peace and love always, y'all.
All right. Byron Saunders. Wayne Gilman, my brothers,
sir.
We'll talk again tomorrow. We might do this again tomorrow because it's a two-parter.
All right.
We got to keep our eyes
on
the devil. All right, my brothers.
Okay.
We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Peace out.
This has been K Thompson Live, formerly K Son and Friends. Those are my friends. Legendary newsman Wayne Gilman, my brother Byron Saunders, the fantastic historian, and I'm Citizen Payne, just an angry black man. Here we go. We'll see you again next time, everybody. What do we say? Keep hope alive. The struggle continues. Later for that. Keep fighting back. All right. We'll talk to you again later. Here's a little bit of Bob for you. Thank you.